This is Friday, August 13th, the second lecture at the Freiburg New Church Assembly. My title is Revelation, the Way the Divine Speaks to Us.
Who are you?
Oh, I'm Bill Wolfenden, sometimes known as Pop Wolf. Not Euclid. Thank you. I have to clear my eyes after that one. I want to begin with just three brief quotations from Swedenborg, cited in their original form, in keeping with the thesis of my brother-in-law, George Dole, that it's easier to read Swedenborg in Latin than in most English versions. The first one is from the Spiritual Diary, number 152, and pardon my rusty Latin, Revelationes hodie sicut antiquitos nequiant existera nisi per modum extraordinarium, which translate roughly as today, there can no longer be revelations as there were in ancient times, except in an unusual way. The second is from the Arcana, number 1775, Revelatio seu verbum est commune vas recipiens spiritualium et caelestium, which appears to be a definition of sorts as follows. A revelation or word is a general or common container of spiritual and celestial things. And the third, also from the Arcana at 8694, per revelationem intelligitur illustratio cum legitur verbum et tunc perceptio, nam qui in bono sunt et desiderant verum, ili ex verbo iti docentur. This also seems to qualify as a definition equating revelation with enlightenment. It says revelation means receiving enlightenment and perception when reading the word, for this is how good people who long for truth are taught from the word. Now, while it would be inaccurate and unfair to suggest that by these statements, Swedenborg seems to limit revelation to the word, I think it's fair to state that much more often than not, this seems to be his presumption. And I think it's also true that for him, the word means the sacred scriptures, which we know as contained in the Holy Bible. But there are a number of other relevant, There are a number of other relevant ideas of revelation that we may look at, and I have to say that I chose these from the currently available translations. I can hardly wait for the new century editions all to get out because the language is a bit of a barrier here. If you haven't bought the New Heaven and Hell or the New Divine Love and Wisdom or the New Divine Providence, they're available now in the new century edition, and others will be following soon. Let me first call attention briefly to a book published by Prentice Hall in 1973 called Revelation, the Divine Fire by a man named Brad Steiger. Among other things, it contains some brief mention of Swedenborg based on an article by Wilson Van Dusen which appeared in the periodical called The Psychedelic Review. This was back in 1971. Steiger did extensive research into contemporary phenomena ranging from glossolalia, speaking with tongues, to faith healing, to Jesus people, and he makes the following statement, and I think he took his cue from Swedenborg. He said, after exhaustive research and interviews, I am convinced that the soul igniting mechanism of the gifts of the Spirit did not cease with the prophets and saints of antiquity. I contend that the divine fire, the transfer of thought, spirit, and power from an infinite intelligence to a finite human intelligence, is a vital continuing process which observes no denominational boundaries and employs a spiritual psychic mechanism that is timeless and universal. That's the end of the quote. I believe what he intended to say is simply that revelation is still going on. Now, since revelation is one of those topics like the weather which generally everyone talks about but no one does anything about, it might be in order to have before you a dictionary definition or two. One appropriate brief one is, revelation is a manifestation of divine will or truth. And that seems like a pretty good idea. Don't want to skip a page here. A somewhat more complex but possibly more helpful one, taken from a dictionary of philosophy, philosophers, you know, are long-winded, reads, revelation is the communication to man of the divine will. This communication has taken, in the history of religions, almost every conceivable form. For example, the results of lot casting, oracular declarations, dreams, visions, ecstatic experiences induced by whatever means, such as intoxicants, books, prophets, unusual characters, revered traditional practices, storms, pestilence, etc. The general conception of revelation has been that the divine communication comes in ways unusual, in ways not open to the ordinary channels of investigation. This, however, is not a necessary corollary. Revelation of the divine will may well come through ordinary channels. So he's contradicting himself already. The give and take of everyday experience through reason and reflection and intuitive insight. And that's the end of that little definition. One might go even further and suggest that anything that we are aware of that we are convinced is either the act of God or God is directly dependent on God's will or to act is by definition revelation. Well, this, however, might get us into a lot of trouble. For by the law of dependency, no activity of any sort is possible unless the power comes from God. Thus, one might conclude that every sort of activity of which we are aware is revelation. Somehow that seems to stretch our credulity beyond acceptable limits. It seems obvious we must avoid trivializing the concept of revelation. If, for instance, we accept tentatively that revelation is a manifestation of the communication to us of the divine will, we need at the same time to take into account that much of what happens in this world is not a manifestation of the divine will, but in many instances a result of divine permission or tolerance, or, as I like to phrase it, what God is willing to put up with. In Swedenborg's book, Divine Providence, the third chapter is titled, In All That It Does, the Lord's Divine Providence Looks to What Is Infinite and Eternal. That's the end of the quote. Would it not seem reasonable then to presume that revelation would be limited to those things that have this potential? Or those things which would somehow point us toward that which is infinite or eternal? Going back to the earlier extended dictionary definition of revelation, it's well worth noting that divine communication would not necessarily have to occur in some unusual way, such as through a specially prepared seer, such as Swedenborg, but could as well come in the give and take of ordinary everyday experience. In what I considered a perceptively an analytical essay by George Dole, which I was happy to be able to publish in Studio Swedenborgiana a number of years ago, he distinguished there what he called three basic means, or modes rather, of revelation, labeling them organic, behavioral, and written. And in his analysis, organic revelation was defined as revelation through the world of nature, citing the 19th Psalm, which begins, How clearly the sky reveals God's glory, how plainly it shows that what he has done. And then behavioral revelation is defined as revelation through the actions of people. With that limitation, I guess I would extend the first category, God in nature, to include all of creation below the human level. But in doing this, I realize it may blur the apparently clear distinction between organic and behavioral, since many of the activities of birds and animals are obviously better described as behavioral than organic. In the long run, however, it may not matter, since in the long run, the third mode, that of written revelation, tends far to outweigh the others in both complexity and significance. At the same time, I think we would make a serious blunder if we fail to realize that all revelation occurs at the organic or behavioral level, and that what we call written revelation is really a formalized and crystallized record of revelation, not revelation per se. Revelation, to be it organic or behavioral, occurs at the level of action and needs to be interpreted. The interpretation, in turn, needs to be appropriate to the degree of complexity of the action or the insight. For example, the revelation implicit in our witnessing a beautiful sunrise may need no deeper, quote, explanation than the simple reminder and assurance that this is surely God's world. And it's not a bad way to start a day, incidentally. However, the revelation to be gained from tumbling from a stool and fracturing one's foot may be harder to come by. Having had this experience, some of you will recall, I continued to search for its spiritual implications. But let us never doubt that in each of these instances, some message from God has been occasioned. Presumably, the desirability, perhaps I should say, the necessity of being alert to what God is trying to tell us in all events of life. How can we go about seeking the revelations intended, and is there any way we can validate them? Now, please forgive me for being a little flip with Swedenborg, but first, just for fun, let's try an easy answer first. Would you agree that the major purpose for revelation is to enable us to live the life of religion? Okay. Turning to the book Apocalypse Explained, at number 963 we read, "No one has religion except from revelation, and with us, revelation is the word." End of quote. What action does this seem to indicate? Simple. Just go and read your Bible, and you'll be all set. Would that it were that easy. So much for that approach. This time, instead of trying to collaborate with Swedenborg to confuse you, let me see if I can get Swedenborg to do it all by himself, with no particular help from me. All I'll do is read a few selected passages from the Doctrine of the Sacred Scripture, and I don't read them necessarily in the order they appear in that book. I have number 51, followed by number 25, followed by number 56, and so on. So here's going on a few of those. This is number 51. It reads, "Without doctrine, the word is unintelligible. This is because the word, in the sense of the letter, consists of pure correspondences, so designed that spiritual and celestial things may be simultaneously in it, and that every word it may contain there and is there to serve its, as a basis. For this reason, in some places, in the sense of the letter, truths are not unveiled but veiled, and being so, they are called appearances of truth. There are many truths accommodated to the perception of simple people, whose thoughts do not rise above what they see with their eyes. There are, moreover, some things which appear like contradictions, but there is not a single contradiction in the word when regarded in its own light." That's number 56, no, number 51. Now we go to number 25 briefly. "The spiritual sense of the word at this day has been disclosed by the Lord because of the doctrine of genuine truth, which has now been revealed, and this doctrine and no other agrees with the spiritual sense of the word." So can't get along just with the Bible anymore. And now we go to number 52. "Those who read the word without doctrine, or who do not procure it for themselves, are in the obscurity concerning mere truth. Their minds are wavering and unsettled, liable to errors, prone to heresies, which they also embrace if these are held in favor and supported through some sort of authority. And if their own reputation is not endangered, The word to them is like a lampstand without a light. And they see many things, as it were, in the shade, yet understanding hardly anything, for doctrine alone is that which enlightens. So again, hang on to your Swedenborg fellows. And now number 56. It may be supposed that the doctrine of genuine truth can be acquired by means of a spiritual sense of the word, which is obtained through a knowledge of correspondences. Well, of course. Really? Doctrine, however, is not acquired by such means, but only illustrated and corroborated. For no one comes into the spiritual sense of the word by means of correspondences unless he is first in genuine truth from doctrine. If a man is not first in genuine truth, he may falsify the word by means of some correspondences he may know by connecting them together and explaining them to confirm what is firmly held in his own mind from some principle which he has adopted. Moreover, the spiritual sense is not communicated to anyone except by the Lord alone, and he guards it as he guards heaven, for heaven is within it. It is important, then, that a man should study the word in the sense of the letter. From that sense only is doctrine derived. So here we are back to that first one again. Now, I could go one of two ways. I could presume in the conservative Swedenborgian tradition that the route to finding true doctrine or revelation is to enter on a lifelong study program of the word and the writings, and be grateful for whatever tidbits of revelation happen to fall our way. And I should hope at the same time I would make some concerted effort to apply these tidbits to my ongoing life. Or I could elect to turn all my life energy toward the task of being enlightened by the Lord in the spirit of paragraph 57 of SS, which I just read, or which I'm now going to read, 55, 57. A genuine truth, he says, which is to be the source of doctrine, is manifest in the sense of the letter of the word only to those who are enlightened by the Lord. Enlightenment comes from the Lord alone and is granted to those who love truths because they are truths and who apply them to the uses of life. With others, there is no enlightenment in the word. Enlightenment comes from the Lord alone, because the Lord is in all things of the word. Enlightenment is granted to those who love truths because they are truths and who apply them to the uses of life because they are, as he puts it, in the Lord, and the Lord is in them. For the Lord is his own divine truth, and when this is loved, because it is divine truth, this is loved when it is applied to use, then the Lord is present with it. Well, that's the end of that quote. So here we are, back again. Presumably, I could just throw away all my religious books, including Swedenborg's writings, and just keep a Bible with me at all times. I also find it a sobering thought to realize that only an infinitesimal percentage of the world's population is even aware of the existence of the writings of the New Church, which means, among other things, that most of the people in the world who are seeking the true Christian way of life have essentially no alternative but to seek the enlightenment Swedenborg describes in these paragraphs I just read. I'm trying to read my own writing here. Now, I'm willing to admit that this may be just my problem, but I find the conditions of the root of enlightenment imposed are too stringent. Somehow I feel there must be an alternative route for us run-of-the-mill sinners. It is, of course, possible that our whole theological structure is a house of cards. But if that were so, then why did Swedenborg spend so much energy over so many years to write and publish the theological works? So, all you sinners who are still with me, suppose we look in earnest for an alternative route. One significant thing we are warned about, or at least made aware of, is that full, genuine truth is never available to us. I offer part of paragraph 3207 of the Arcana in evidence. Here he writes, "Neither with man nor indeed with an angel are any truths ever pure that is devoid of appearances. For all, both in general and in particular, are appearances of truth. Nevertheless, they are accepted by the Lord as truths, provided good is in them. There are, however, degrees of appearances of truth. Natural appearances of truth are mostly fallacies, but with those who are in good, they are not to be called fallacies, but appearances, and even in some respects, truths. For the good which is in them, and in which is the divine, causes another essence to be in them. But rational appearances of truth are more and more interior. In them are the heavens, that is, the angels who are in the heavens. And that's the end of that quote. On the other hand, we read in AC 9103 that, I quote, "The knowledges of spiritual things must be in man in his natural, in order that there may be spiritual perception. And knowledges of spiritual things must be from revelation." End of quote. So I ask, is it possible we've been going at this business of seeking revelation in a backwards, cart before the horse manner all along? The question I want to raise here is, do we even have a warrant to seek revelation in and of and for itself? In his commentary on the Gospel of Matthew, William Bruce noted that, I quote, "Those who by goodness have received the genuine doctrines of the Word and have been introduced into the church are prepared to see and receive the spiritual sense." And then a little further, "And the outward will may prompt us to learn and even teach the truths of religion, and the understanding labor intelligently and unweariedly in the work, and yet our inner nature, natural mind, may disbelieve and even despise them. There is no real understanding where there is no inner discernment, for the outward sight is derived from the inward perception." And that's the end of that quote. So let me conclude by coupling with Bruce's disturbing second thought some equally disturbing ones gleaned from John Bailey's 1954 Bampton Lectures at Columbia University. He wrote, and he writes in a sort of staccato style, "To listen and obey, that, according to the Bible, is all that is required of us. Revelation makes statements for us to understand, and once we understand, expects us to act on the basis of our understanding. No promise is made in the Bible to those who partially listen." Oh, getting tough here. "Only to those who listen diligently." And that's the key, I think, right there. Some people would argue that they're not aware that God has made himself and his requirements known to them. Well, two questions might be put to those who make this complaint. First, are you sure there isn't something that God is plainly saying to you and to which you are not really listening carefully, giving attention to? What's that in the Bible? "Lord, when did we see you hungry?" And he said, "I tell you the truth, whatever you did not do for one of these, least of these, you did not do for me." We sometimes speak of people being conveniently deaf to human communications. But there's also such a thing as being conveniently deaf toward God. The second question is, if you have listened, have you obeyed? And here we might ask if the problem is that the requirement sometimes seems just too simple, bordering on the trivial, to which the reply is that it's clearly absurd to long for some great revelation or commission from God if we refuse to attend to or deal with the small revelations, or the request that's obviously and clearly before us. I heard someone once say, "I didn't come here to run errands, I came here to work." How hard it is for us to hear a revelation that doesn't quite suit us. Yet I'd venture that many of us have sung with gusto and apparent endorsement John Keble's hymn verse, "The trivial round, the common task, will furnish all we need to ask. room to deny ourselves, a road to bring us daily nearer God. And the biblical formula is really summed up in Exodus. Listen carefully to the voice of the Lord your God. Pay attention to his commands and keep all his decrees. Meaning, as I understand it, we shall receive no further revelation until we have not only hearkened to, but also acted upon the revelation we already have. Probably all of us would do well to consider whether or not the fact is that more enlightenment has already been given to us than we care to use. I'll end with a possibly apocryphal story of the preacher who preached a sermon that people listened to carefully, and the next Sunday he preached the same sermon, and they seemed to listen carefully. About the third Sunday when he did it, they said, well, you preached that the last couple of weeks. He said, why are you doing this? He said, I'm just waiting for you to practice it. The floor is yours. Yes, Dave.
Two minor things. When you talked about your foot injury, it reminded me of Paul with his so-called thorn in his side, and right. Not being, he wasn't, I don't believe, he was quite certain why the Lord had so afflicted him, as you are. And the second thing, just a minor, hopefully somewhat humorous, about revelation and different means. Not to say there's a cause and effect, but I think I heard that during his revelation, Swedenborg was drinking great amounts of coffee and sugar.
Well, we could try that. I'm going to...
Isn't that your chemical?
Yeah, right. not the organic, but the chemical, right. Thank you. Yes, George.
Yeah, three things which I think I can make fairly quick. One is this comparison with revelation at present and revelation in ancient times. I question because we don't know how common revelation was in ancient times. I mean, there were millions of people back there. We've got the selection of the few that got some. There may be just as much now as then. But millions of people are just deaf now as they were then.
True.
Second is I just ran across a passage in AR which says very simply, the inner mind is opened by the life of charity. This isn't just a matter of figuring things out.
Right.
And then the third, relating to the last point, is Jim Perry's story from some years ago. A farmer's son comes back from agricultural school full of books and all excited and plunks them down on the kitchen table and says, Dad, you've got to read this stuff. It's great. His father just looks and says, son, I ain't farming half as good as I know how already.
Very good, right. Yeah, the thing that I really want to make clear is that we need to be aware that revelation is a live, ongoing thing. It does come to us, and we often don't recognize it because, as I say, we may think it involves something that seems too simple. Yes, Billy Lee.
Well, building on what George said about, what was the one about the life of charity?
The inner mind is opened by a life of charity.
By the life of charity.
The inner mind is opened by a life of charity. Some of what I was gleaning from what you were saying is we think we can just go to the Bible and find out what's true, but we can't unless we're attempting to apply what we already have and are genuinely using it to live a good life.
Right.
And that as we do that, then the Lord opens up our inner mind to see more. There, but if we go to the Bible and we learn some interesting facts and we keep on living the same way we did before, we're going to go off into all sorts of wrong ways of seeing the Bible, even though it potentially is right there, that it's really the Lord opening up our understanding from within as we follow what we've learned so far.
Right. Yes. Just a comment for Ken. I think I said last week in one of my talks that, do you realize what you got yourself into when you became a Swedenborgian? It really puts us on the obligation not only to become reasonably well familiar with the Bible, but also reasonably well informed in Swedenborg. So you're talking about the Bible and another 30 volumes. And how many own the whole set? How often do you read them?
What's
Well, it's a tough question, but it is true that we have a gold mine here, if we will only realize it. And it does, as has been made clear, I think, at this session, point to, always points back to the Bible, always back to the Word. And yet, Swedenborg, as I think I illustrated this morning, can be a bit long-winded. And sometimes finding those terse little definitions are good things to grab onto. Yes, Bob. Oh, I'm sorry, Ken. Go ahead, Bob.
Isn't it also possible that the Lord's advent is continual with us, like water trying to continually flow into the ground to irrigate and propagate, and the Lord's inflow is not going to be shut off because we haven't fully enacted everything from the past, but it's going to be continually urging us onward, right, as you say, the common.
And this is another example of revelation. This is revelation, absolutely. Yeah, Ken.
I just wanted to confirm that I heard you say early on in your lecture that revelation is not possible without the literal level or the natural level.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the container of it.
Right.
And then again, it isn't possible without taking that to the next step.
Right.
And I just wanted again refer that to Colgate, that there again, that's affirming the good role that the natural level plays in our spiritual growth process.
Right.
Getting to the spiritual is not possible without moving through and from the natural level.
Yeah. This is why I hope it was obvious that some of the passages I chose I did deliberately, because they're incomplete in and of themselves. If we're not aware of the other passages that do confirm this concept, then we're missing the point very much.
I guess the last thing I'd tack on, you know, we need to study the Bible and we need to study Swedenborg, but then Swedenborg himself is constantly saying, if you don't put this to practice in your life, you're guilty of faith alone.
That's right. Sorry about that. No way to avoid it. Yes, Lee.
Well, another set of statements in Swedenborg that can look circular that you edged upon is that he says the doctrine must be drawn from the literal sense of the word.
And confirmed thereby.
And confirmed by it. So in other words, he said very clearly, you can't draw your doctrine from the spiritual meaning because it's easy to distort that. You have to draw it from and distort that to support whatever you want.
I said that in one of the...
Right. But you do have to draw it from the plain statements. And there's great power, Swedenborg says, in the literal statements, which are often very concrete and easy to remember.
Right.
But then on the other hand, he says, you can't understand the literal meaning of the word without doctrine.
Right.
The doctrine has to be drawn from the literal sense, and you can't understand the literal sense without doctrine.
Yeah, I know. Well, my hunch is that we probably would all do well to get better acquainted with our Bibles first. And then, to the extent that we can fit it into our program, get better acquainted with Swedenborg. I think in that order. At least that's what I'd recommend.
You just read the Arcana and do both.
Yeah, you could do that. Well, the trouble, you know, as has been noted in lectures, that in detail, Swedenborg only deals with Genesis, Exodus, and Revelation. So, and he certainly does bring in a lot. And oddly enough, Apocalypse Explained, which he left unpublished, which we have published, does more with other parts of the Bible than almost anything else he wrote. And yet he chose for some reason not to publish that himself. Thank goodness we did, I keep saying. Well, I thank you for your attention, and we will give you a little extra time.